two. Now they're out of timeouts.
Down by two. 1:43 left.
Down two. Gets a shot off.
Down by two.
Welcome back. Good to be back. Good to be back from the summer. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the rest of your summer, as I know I did, as I know Bird did. Here we are back at it again. The Down by Two podcast brought to you by our good old friends at Cryer Media. Visit Cryer.co for all things DB2 and sports related content, and by our buddies over at Indestructible Clothing Company. Visit Indestructible online, use promo code Down by Two, all one word, lowercase, for 15% off your next order. How about that? Of course, use it. Why not?
Yeah.
And then can't forget about our friends over at Yupbeer. Visit yupbeer.com to find a location near you, now available across grocery stores and beer stores all over Ontario. It's your boy, Josh Elijah Birdman. Good to see you, buddy. I've missed you. I've missed you. It's good
going through withdrawal, I feel like.
Dude, it was so nuts. I mean, I just got back from Portugal and Berlin, where we were on our honeymoon, celebrating our honeymoon, a couple honeys having a moon. But yeah, just the time difference and everything, like the, like not only withdrawal from you and seeing your beautiful face every week, but withdrawal from sports, man. Like I was doing whatever I could. Like, I'm just like, what if I just sneakily just try and slide into the score bet and they just don't know where I am, and then I could play? No.
Yeah, you've got like some VPN going on your phone.
Yeah, no, they figured me out quick. I fired up. I was able to get some Bodog action going on as well. So I was able to get a couple in, but like fantasy-wise, completely screwed as well. Like all three of my football leagues were just off the rails. I'm just like, there's trades going left, right, and center. I have no idea what's going
all
on.
All three of my football leagues. Like, yeah. Buddy, relax.
I know. It's just funny. Like, three is too much. Three is way too much because, like, there's so many different variables that can go wrong. And, like, across the board, I'm just 2-2. Like, it's just, there's no way that you could just win all of your fantasy leagues. So, I feel like two, if you're doing two per sport, that's the sweet spot. Three, too much. But, hey,
even two per sport is tough. That's
two per sport is tough.
Like how many leagues are we talking? You know what I mean? That could add up pretty quickly. You're looking at like six, seven, eight different,
dropping a grand on fantasy leagues. Jeez.
Yeah, exactly. Like it's just a lot to keep up with too. Like
maybe
really got
what
it dialed in.
Maybe what I'll do next year is I'll just draft all Miami Dolphins players. And then when they have these, like for all of the teams, maybe I'll do six. And then I'll know exactly how I'm doing across the board.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're putting up 70 points, I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure you'll win your league. So yeah, it's pretty nuts, but it's again, good to be back. Just wish that our first episode back was under different circumstances, as we were focusing in on our Toronto Blue Jays as they were swept for a second straight postseason in a row, this time at the hands of the Minnesota Twins as they fell 2-0 to the Twins, winning both their games at Target Field in Minnesota. Just literally depressing. And we talked about this with our guest on the show, who we were really excited to be able to sit down with a former guest on the podcast as well, and formerly on Tim and Friends and Sportsnet's Jesse Rubinoff. Chatted with him immediately after the game last night. Like, hey, let's sit down and chat about this a little bit and just break things down. I don't know about you. I didn't get much sleep after the game. I just, lied awake in my bed, staring at the ceiling, just figuring out where it all went wrong. And there's just so many fingers that you can point, but for me, I'm not really as upset as a lot of other Jays fans are.
No,
because I'm not surprised.
That's what I was gonna say. Like, we've been talking about this all year, and I feel like we were more frustrated like 3-4 months ago than we are now.
You see,
this is just an extension of what we've been watching all fucking year. So like going into it, I was like, oh, Minnesota, okay. But I feel like we all kind of fell into that trap of like the Leafs last year getting matched up with the Panthers and just being like, oh,
yes,
okay, sick. Yeah, no, we got this. We don't have to do the Rays. We don't have to face the juggernaut Orioles. Like, you know, this might be a good path to making the next round, you know? And man, it's just not even close. Not even close.
Our pitching is outstanding. And of course, you got to score runs if you're going to win a baseball game. I mean, you can't score one collective run over the two games. It's just that's bad.
Mathematically, it is not possible.
You're not going to win. It's just, you know, I mean, I guess we preemptively already saw this. And like I've been preaching, to go 4-9, win four of your last nine games to end the regular season, and then to see the Blue Jays celebrating by losing to get into the playoffs, like, you're limping in.
This was another point of contention for a lot of people. And it's like, yeah, I get it. That's tradition. You play 162 games. Like, it's mm-hmm. a long year. And, you know, only one team from each division makes the playoffs, right? So to get into that wild card, even, it's an accomplishment, right?
Sure.
But
that's the bare minimum that we're asking from the squad.
Our championship right there.
Basically, like, you missing the wild card, that, like, that's not an option. Like, that's not what this team is built for. That's not what this window suggests. This team was built to win this year, let alone make it out of the first round of the playoffs. And
I would feel guilty if that was me celebrating. I'd be like, this doesn't feel right.
Finished.
Honestly,
job
the job hasn't even started.
So. No, like, no, it hasn't. It's just a lot of frustration, and we've seen it online. We've seen it in the media, around everywhere. It's just been, you know, a lot to digest. But for us, you know, we can't say we didn't warn you. We've been talking about this with the multiple guests that we've had on the show. You know, the Jays did do what they needed to do to get into the playoffs, which is, you know, not win games, but at the hands of Seattle, you know, not pulling it together towards the end of the season. All in all, I mean, yeah, you get what you wish for, and it was Minnesota. And I mean, we matched up pretty good against the Rays. We played all right in the trop throughout the season. You know, they could have ended differently, but, you know, we got the hand that we were dealt with. And here to break it down with us is, again, Sportsnet's Jesse Rubinoff, being able to jump on the show. So let's take a look and jump into that. But first, let's just fire off a couple quick bets. This is actually going to be, we've always preached the concept of line shopping and finding the best odds across the different sports books, using the BetStamp app, finding the best odds out there and being able to maximize your returns. But that's going to be coming to an end soon. So stay tuned, because we got some pretty, pretty cool news coming up. I'm really excited to be able to share some of the new benefits of what we're about to roll out. So stay tuned for that. But when it comes to our picks, we got a couple picks lined up here for you for the weekend, week five of football coming down this weekend. Look, I'm gonna start off with my pick real quick here. I really like the Texans, man. I'm on the Stroud train. It's crazy to think that I would ever take the Texans on the money line, but they, you know, dismantled a good Pittsburgh defense. They've managed to make it to 2-2 after beating the Jacksonville Jaguars, who are no slouch of a team this year either. I mean, they do have their issues they got to work through, but man, the Texans are making things happen. Stroud, you know, definitely figuring things out, and he's looking like a very steady, good quarterback, and looking like the rookie that everyone you know, thought that he could be. Definitely looking like it was the better pick out of between him and Bryce Young. But early on in the season, I don't know. I'm watching more Texans football right now. I don't know. I mean, like, I'm all over the board here, but yeah, I like the Texans. Take the money line. They're facing a Falcons defense that, you know, can be a little bit stingy, but I'm not too worried about it. I think Stroud will definitely connect with Nico Collins a bit more. I kind of like this pick, and not really afraid of the Falcons, and they don't really have much of a quarterback in Ritter. So there you have it. Take the Texans on the money line. Best odds I found were at +114, available over on Pinnacle. Jesse, what about you?
Birdie. Hello. Just to add to that, I saw a lot of people saying that the Jaguars had like a pretty easy path to winning the division, right? So do you think
hello,
that,
I said that's
that. Oh, was that your pick? Okay. I mean, shit, might have been you. So do you think
a lot of other people thought the same too?
It's not just, do you think
it's not a unique take.
Jeopardy, or like, do you think the Texans have a pretty good chance to challenge for that? Or
I mean, the schedule hasn't changed for them. Some of the wins, you know, they lost to the Falcons, and that's one that you could definitely chalk up to it. I still think that they'll figure things out. Trevor Lawrence will still he's looked okay, but we'll have to take a look. I still think that they have a good chance of winning their division because there's not a lot of competition when you're looking at it. So, I definitely think they'll figure it out. They have too many weapons to not be that good. The Bengals, on the other hand, I mean, don't even get me started on them. I don't even know what's going on with pay the man and he just stops playing football. But, you know, we digress.
It happens. So
let's talk about our Lions, man. Yeah.
The Lions. Oh, our Lions. Yes. I like that.
Roar.
The Lions are looking like the real deal finally, dude. Like I feel like we kind of got like a little glimpse of that last year, but there's just too many close games, right? Like, can't win all those close games. So they're finally looking like the team that maybe we thought they were last year, and they're going to go up against the Panthers, who, like, let's face it, they'll be lucky if they get a win or two this year. So I think that's an easy one to hammer the spread. Let's do it.
Yeah. Like it's always when you're looking at -9.5, it's tough. You see other books that have it out at -10.5, but I like -9.5. Maybe go on the under for that too. It's looking like it's around 44 for the points. So when you see that -9.5 spread, you can probably look at an under for that game. Carolina just can't put up points on the board, man. Bryce Young's got to figure it out. It's looking like Miles Sanders, their RB1, could potentially be injured for that week. So, you know, without them, like, he's got some options. I mean, Thielen's been playing pretty good, but you know, just all around, it's looking a little bleak for the Carolina Panthers as opposed to the Detroit Lions. I mean, Dan Campbell's got them running through a brick wall. They're looking gritty. You know, David Montgomery playing that cowbell running back. They're rolling, man. I like it a lot. Going to be looking at some player props for that too. But yeah, got a lot of fun football coming up this weekend. Really excited for some of the matchups. But like we mentioned, we had Jesse Rubinoff from Sportsnet breaking down what was a disaster of an ending to a season that had a lot of high hopes and a lot of aspirations for a World Series, let alone make it out of the first round of the playoffs, which they did not. So here he is, Jesse Rubinoff, breaking it all down for us. All right, let's just jump right into it. We have Jesse Rubinoff from Sportsnet, and formerly from Tim and Friends as well, joining us back on the show. Thank you so much for jumping back on with us. Unfortunately, this time around, under different circumstances, different topic of conversation here, as the Blue Jays were swept 2-0 in the series, and the score from last night in Game 2 as well in Minnesota. Let's get your thoughts on it. I mean, there's been a bit of a divide when it comes to where to point the finger. Is it the call to take Berrios out in the fourth, or obviously a lack of run production? But let's get to the root of what the problem is and what you were able to take away with that decision.
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Brother, great to have you back on, man.
The root of the issue for sure in this two-game series was not the pitching and not the managing decisions. It was the offense, and that to, I think, a lot of people who watched this team over the course of 162 and then 164 would tell you that that was the issue that plagued this team the entire way through. They couldn't score when it mattered. They had very difficult times putting big numbers, crooked numbers up on the board. And the reality is, when you don't score, it's very hard to win baseball games.
Of course.
But I think even more than that, and the fact that I consider this to be probably the most embarrassing loss that I've seen maybe in my 30 plus years of following the Toronto Blue Jays. I don't think I've seen to this moment in time a single person that agreed with the decision to take Jose Berríos out of the game yesterday. Not one outside of the Toronto Blue Jays organization, not the Minnesota Twins. They didn't think it was a smart decision. Not anybody watching that game, not any fans, not any followers, nobody. So when that's the case, and you as an organization think you're smarter than everybody else, and it comes back to bite you, that I think is when fans look at it and say, look, that's a little over the top. That's a little too much for me and too embarrassing and too much to take. There was no reason to take Jose Berríos out of that game whatsoever. I was watching it. I was at the office watching it. And mm-hmm. we were all absolutely flabbergasted by that because, as John Schneider even said, Jose Berríos may have had the best stuff he's had all year.
Electric.
Even the best stuff he's had as a Toronto Blue Jay. And you just signed this guy to a long-term deal for $131 million. If you don't think he can go through the order a second time, then why did you re-sign him? He was unbelievable yesterday. Yeah, he had a walk, but the walk was a good decision instead of giving a fastball down the middle and potentially running into some problems. Absolutely. This was a plan that came from clearly the front office. And John Schneider, I think, probably had a decision to make over the course of the game. Do I go with the plan that we had? This is just me speculating, but this is mm-hmm. what I think makes the most sense. And he didn't trust his gut and didn't trust his eyes and decided to be essentially a yes man to the front office and make a decision that was not the right decision to make in that moment. So for me, that's why it's incredibly embarrassing of a loss and disappointing. And then number two, Vladimir Guerrero getting picked off at second base. Simply can't, it just can't happen in that.
It's inexcusable.
Moment. It's completely inexcusable. And there have been many times over the course of this season, in a season where the Blue Jays, I think, were preaching attention to detail from right at the beginning of the season, spring training. That was their go-to phrase. We're going to be smarter than last year. It's going to be all attention to detail. And they didn't have it for the majority of the season. They were bottom five in the league in outs on the base pass. And to have a guy who, it was so bizarre. It was like he was almost focused on Bo being at the plate and telling Bo to sort of calm down and you can do it, not paying attention to his own situation in a moment that could have flipped the game and ultimately flipped the entire postseason for the Toronto Blue Jays. Your best hitter at the plate. And you get picked off at second. And really, from those two moments, from the Berríos getting pulled and what that does to the rest of the team who probably didn't agree with it, and some of them said it, to Vladdy getting picked off at second,
those are
almost impossible to come back from. And you saw it in just a disappointing way to end the season when, and I believe, and I said this a bunch of times on the radio over the course of the summer, they had the recipe, guys. Like, this was a team that really could have done some damage just based on the fact that the rotation was the best in baseball, frankly. Yeah. And they had a bullpen that was good enough. And so to sit here today and have them be out, it just feels like a lot of it was self-inflicted, and that's just unacceptable.
Yeah, I mean, the call to take out Berríos, it's just, you know, you mentioned that it might not have been Schneider's call. It might have come from up top as well. Yeah. But it almost felt like they went in with that game plan that, you know, at some point they were going to put in Kikuchi, whether anybody liked it or not. Like, it's almost like they didn't even game plan for Berríos to be pitching lights out, which is what really is infuriating about that is that, you know, they were going to go ahead and do that anyways. But what's also baffling to me is why Kikuchi? I don't understand why they wouldn't put in one of their trusted lefties from the pen that are built for that sort of situation. Why do you think that they decided to just go with Kikuchi, who, great pitcher, I don't know how clutch he is, though. It's not like he screams clutch to me.
Yeah, no, there's no question of the course of Yusei Kikuchi's Blue Jays career. He has struggled in big pressure moments, I would say. Last year, obviously more than this year. He did a much better job this year, and he was a much, much better pitcher. But I do think when they were looking at who they could use, they had this thing in their minds that, okay, game one, they used a lot of their relievers. And game two, they had this idea where John Schneider said after the game, they wanted to try and utilize as much of the roster as they possibly could. And rightly or wrongly, that involved Yusei Kikuchi, probably Chris Bassitt, or I know Chris Bassitt was also available for game two, which to me didn't make a lot of sense considering if you were going to have a game three, potentially, if you're going to come back, who was going to end up pitching game three. So ultimately Bassitt didn't see the light of day in that game, but bringing Kikuchi in was something I think they looked at the lineup and they said, we have a guy who potentially could give us a couple innings here as a standout lefty over the course of the year. He has come out of the bullpen in the past, not this season, obviously, but has done it in the past before effectively. He throws hard. His breaking stuff can be nasty when he throws off of that fastball. Mm-hmm. And that's what they saw. And they thought that bringing him in against lefties was going to force Rocco Baldelli's hand to try and make some moves, get the lefties out of the game. And Baldelli said, okay, if you're going to hand this to me on a silver platter and take a guy who's basically untouchable out of the game, then I will make those moves now, because now in the postseason, in this inning, is the time to strike. If we can get one or two or three against Kikuchi here, then we're going to end up winning the game, because you're not going to be able to touch our pitcher, who's Sonny Gray was the race all year, and you're not going to be able to touch our bullpen like they couldn't touch the bullpen in game one either. So that was the critical point of the game. Baldelli said, all right, I'm good with your decision-making. Let me counter to that. And it ended up working against the Blue Jays, a decision I wouldn't have made. And I think probably if you pulled the rest of the teams around baseball, I don't think you'd find one other team that would have agreed with the decision the Toronto Blue Jays made yesterday. And I'm not, and this isn't revisionist history either. Like, I think in the moment, it's one thing to look back on a move afterwards and say, oh, I don't agree with it. And you could say, well, because it didn't work out. That's easy to say.
Yeah.
But in the moment, everyone I know who we were talking about, because you saw him pitching, you saw Kikuchi pitching in the bullpen. And he was pitching with some authority and you knew he was coming in at some point soon. So I think seeing that, you're like, what are they doing? Barrios is cooking. You got to let the guy cook. So in the moment, nobody agreed with it. And then after the result, clearly nobody agreed with it even more.
What is even more baffling to me is that they've kind of been down this road when you don't have to look much further than last year in game two. I mean, I got similar feelings. It's not the same scenario because the Blue Jays absolutely crumbled in game two against the Mariners. But you look at the decision to take out Gausman instead of letting him work through his quote unquote mess. It wasn't really, it would have made it out fine. But had he not been pulled, then, you know, it led to a Mesa wild pitch and then a 3-run home run. And that began the downfall of the Blue Jays there. But it's almost like they've trusted the numbers before. And this was a way riskier situation. So I really don't understand why they would have done that and gone with the numbers as opposed to their gut. And to me, I don't know if you agree, but and Jesse, we've been talking about this a lot today too, is I find that was more critical than, you know, the lack of base run production for the Blue Jays. Obviously Guerrero getting picked off was just flat out embarrassing, but you know, had Barrios worked through that and they didn't pull him, and the bullpen hadn't surrendered a run, and I don't count Kikuchi as a part of the bullpen, you could be looking at a 0-0 scenario in extras. Yeah. So, I mean, you really don't know how that could have played out. So do you think that was more pivotal than, you know, a lack of run production? I mean, it's hard to kind of weigh your options, but
no, I do think it's a really good point, because it shifted the tenor of the entire game. It gave the Twins some momentum when they didn't have any, because Barrios, aside from the walk, was pretty much
mowing them down.
He was pretty much untouchable. Like we said, had his best stuff he's maybe ever had as a Toronto Blue Jay. And then as soon as Barrios got taken out of the game, you could almost see like the Twins' eyes light up. Say, like, why would the Blue Jays make this decision? And then on the Blue Jays side of things, you have a guy that's going at that level. Like, you're pretty confident that, okay, we're going to figure it out. Barrios is good. You're comfortable that you're going to get your chance, right? But then you take Barrios out of the game, and everyone on the team, I think you heard them in the post game, but none of them could really explain
how that furious move.
Right. So in that moment, I think as a player, you're like, what's going on? Like, what, do they not trust us to score one run or two runs eventually? Like, why are they micromanaging this game to this degree? And I think you start to, it takes away a little bit from your focus. Maybe it shouldn't, but I think it's human nature to just start asking questions and being like having the momentum sort of stripped away from you in that moment. So I do think things could have turned out a little bit differently.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. There was more pressure, I think, on them afterwards, because we've seen all year long the Blue Jays have difficulty when they play from behind, and they play from behind a lot this season. But say Barrios had got out of that inning scoreless, and they go into the next inning and you score because you're still feeling yourselves a little bit more. That changes everything. And maybe it's too much to ask that they could have put even one run on the board. But I do think the pulling of Barrios really affected the game psychologically on both sides. And people, I don't think people give that enough credit, because if I'm out there and I'm seeing Barrios going like that, I don't want to see him out of the game if I'm a Blue Jay.
Well, then you also, I mean, like, they're getting the pen warmed up in the second, right? And that the only person who wasn't, you know, fazed by that was Berrios, because he kept pitching lights out. And then, you know, if you're in the Jays dugout, that would suck the life out of you, seeing that, you know, one of your best pitchers out there and pitching a hell of a game. And then to see the bullpen getting fired up, too. It's just, for me, that would completely suck the energy out of the clubhouse. So moving forward, there's a lot of decisions that are going to have to be made. Tons of decisions. There's a lot of free agents that are going to be hitting the market. It's going to be a tough sort of free agent pool when we're looking at the offseason here. It's a mess right now when it comes to the Jays. I'm not sure what direction, but, you know, what do you see potentially panning out, or what direction would you say the Jays may go in?
Yeah, well, they do have a significant number of free agents. Kevin Kiermaier, Matt Chapman, Whit Merrifield has a mutual option with the team. I can't imagine seeing him back. I would think that Chapman's probably, especially after what Whit had to say about
the thing,
he hated it quite
frankly.
I don't see a lot of those guys coming back. I think there's going to be more of a wave of the Buffalo Bisons that we saw when in August and September there was that little Bisons bump, and I think those guys are going to get an opportunity in spring training to make the opening day roster. Matt Chapman's going to get paid by somebody. I don't think it's going to be by the Toronto Blue Jays, because at his age, it'd be 31, I believe, and defense is usually the first thing to go when you get over 30, and we saw how he declined at the plate from April onwards. He was one of the hottest hitters in all of baseball in April, and then really struggled the rest of the year, and had potentially a couple big moments in the postseason, but that's baseball. Didn't work out. A couple inches here, a couple inches there. That's the way it goes. I would imagine that if, you know, Brandon Belt seems like he's going to take some time, but looks like a guy who's ready to retire. Kiermaier, I would imagine, is probably at his age going to see who can pay him the most on the open market. Similar to Chapman, similar to Whit Merrifield. So I think the majority of those guys are probably not going to be back. So this team is going to look much different come spring training in February next year. I think they probably will look to make a big swing, whether you make a phone call for Shohei Ohtani or something like that. Like, you need to do something. But I am very much concerned about this missed opportunity in this postseason, like I was a year ago.
Yes.
Because it's not every year where you have the New York Yankees and the Boston Red Sox struggle to their degree. And now the Baltimore Orioles have leapfrogged you in the division. The Tampa Bay Rays, while they struggle in the postseason, are always good somehow.
Yeah.
And the division's just going to get harder. And when you don't, there were two things that I've criticized Ross Atkins for heavily over the last couple of years. And both times it involved not supplementing this roster more at the trade deadline. And I know that they went out and got Jordan Hicks, who was the best reliever out in the open market. And he's also a free agent. And I would love to have them try and bring him back, because he's actually, he's the real deal. And he has some issues with free passes at times, but that's a guy you want in your bullpen. So I would hope that they try and pony up for him. But at the end of the day, you needed to address this offense at the deadline. And just like 2 years ago, they needed to do more to address the bullpen. And it always feels like the weakness for this team can be identified at various points of the season. And they haven't done enough to try and put this team over the top. And when you have a window to try and win, you have to take advantage of that. Next year, guys, I'm going to call it right now. There's no chance they have four starters with over 30 starts. That does not happen. It just doesn't happen. And Gausman and Bassett and Berrios and Kikuchi all having ERAs under 380. That doesn't happen in Major League Baseball.
No. Like,
they're all getting older. And
this was the window.
To expect them to have the health that they had this year, the consistency that they had this year, that stuff does not happen. So I'm very concerned that they may have missed an opportunity here. And yeah, they're going to have a chance to salvage it by seeing what they do on the free agent market and whether David Schneider's great or Ricky Tiedemann comes up or something like that. But barring a major move, I'm not going to have the same optimism in this team moving forward as I did this season, because this was the year to really, they had a pitching staff to win the World Series, not to win a game or a wild card series. They had the pitching and the bullpen to win a World Series, and they blew it. That's simple as that.
You know what? It's crazy. And, you know, I was talking about this too, where it's like, of course I was livid when they pulled Berrios, and did I get up from my couch and silently walk into my bedroom and scream into a pillow when Guerrero got picked off? Absolutely. Yeah. But I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised at this effort. I was afraid this was going to happen, and it kind of did, because this is the same sort of Blue Jays that we've seen all year. And knowing that this is our window, that's what makes it even more frustrating. When you have a team like the Blue Jays that limp into the playoffs the way they did and then celebrate something that they haven't even accomplished much for anyways. So it's, you know, to go 4-9 to limp into the playoffs, this was not a team that I was necessarily confident in. And then obviously going into next season, I'm feeling even less confident and less optimistic, much like.
Yeah, I feel like they need to address certain things, whether, you know, specifically offensively, their approach this year, whatever they were preaching did not work.
No.
And they made the change and I guess sacrifice to take power away from this lineup in order to be better defensively. And it simply did not work. Whatever they were preaching to the hitters, they have to find a way to either get more power internally and try and have these guys pull more baseballs as opposed to try and use the rest of the field, which seems to be the message that was used for the duration of this season, or they got to supplement it from outside, because you cannot, when you guys are all hitting 240 to 260, you aren't going to string together enough rallies to compensate for the lack of power that you have in your lineup. And it was a different team this year than last year. Like last year was sort of all or nothing with the home run ball. This was the complete and utter opposite. And at the beginning of the year and really throughout the year, like I thought it was fine, because if you can get timely hitting and you have the pitching that you have, it's still doable. But at the end of the day, I think going into next year, knowing those flaws that you have, if you don't address it, you're going to run into the same problems, and that won't be good for anybody. Because, and also, like, at the end of the day, it's also an entertainment product.
Yeah.
And this team was not even close to as entertaining or likable as last year. And a lot of that really was because they didn't score as much.
Yeah.
Like, how absolutely. Many times are you watching a team screaming at the TV? I mean, like, how are they not scoring with runners in scoring position? Like, they can't do it. They got better near the end.
Terrible.
Of the year, but it was like a joke watching them at times. And these guys are professionals. Like, you have to have a better approach. You're being paid to score, being paid to cash runners in, and they just could not do it. So whether that's Guillermo Martinez, the hitting coach, or just a top-down approach from the front office, that needs to be addressed in some way, shape, or form, because it's really hard to win and put that kind of pressure on your pitchers for 162 games.
Maybe they just need to bring back the home run jacket. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe that could be or a helmet or a bucket or something.
Yeah, like I'm guilty. I'm guilty of like looking at last year's team and saying, I don't know how focused they were and how much, you know, fun they were having. Everything involved around the home run jacket. And I know that, you know, people look at that now and say, oh, maybe they shouldn't have done that, or maybe they shouldn't have gotten rid of Teoscar, and maybe they shouldn't have traded Lourdes Gurriel. But the idea at the time made a lot of sense, right? And it's that part of it, I think, is revisionist history to look at that and say we shouldn't have done that because there was a plan. Like, they were not good defensively last year. Teoscar Hernandez in the outfield was a disaster. And there was a reason why fans specifically wanted those guys. They wanted Teoscar Hernandez traded. They wanted to get more serious, more professional, and better defensively. And that's what the front office did. And whether you think at the time giving your number one prospect and an outfielder for Dalton Varsho made sense. I mean, hindsight, obviously not a good deal, but the plan at least was there. So now you recognize your flaws at this current point. You have to go out and try and address it again, because going into next year with the same flaws is not going to fly.
One more time, Sportsnet's Jesse Rubinoff. Jesse, thank you so much for jumping on the show. I know you got a split, but let's maybe leave this on a lighter note going into this weekend of football. Do you have anything that you're looking forward to? Any games that you have circled? Any picks? Anything along those lines?
Well, first of all, love the football season's in full swing here. It's the absolute best.
Hockey, basketball coming up. This is just,
today's Thursday. We got Commanders Bears tonight. I think the Commanders are a pretty sneaky team. Like I like what Sam Howell's done. Takes a few too many risks at times, but I like the Commanders, and it's sad to see what the Bears and Justin Fields have become. I know I turned the corner a little bit last week, but it's tough to watch at times. I just don't know if he's progressing at the level you would want for a starting NFL quarterback for I don't know if he has it in him for the next couple of years. But one team that I'm keeping an eye on that I think is really, I think, sneaky and sort of underrated at this point in time is the Los Angeles Rams.
I was waiting for you to say that.
The reason I say I think people are locked into this idea that the Rams are sort of in like rebuild mode. They traded away Cam Akers and
Jalen Ramsey
year last year, obviously, but the emergence of Puka Nacua and I think the a revitalized Matthew Stafford. Now you have Cooper Kupp coming back into the mix. We'll see if he plays this weekend, but you have Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua on the outside. And Kyren Williams has been fantastic.
The emergence of Williams, man.
It's like, that's a lot of weapons. And I think you're seeing Sean McVay really dial up plays that he's using his talent the best way possible. Mm-hmm. And I don't think people are giving them enough credit, partly because they play in a division with the San Francisco 49ers. So a lot of those other teams in that division get overshadowed.
And the Seahawks as well.
But I do think with Cooper Kupp coming back, if he can manage to stay healthy, I think they're pretty scary. And for me, they're the team that I would watch as sort of a sleeper moving through the rest of the season here.
And, I'm watching every Sunday.
Cooper Kupp just stashed on the injured reserve of my fantasy teams.
Oh, yeah. Same here.
I haven't watched a lot of football. I like them a lot.
Jesse, thank you so much.
Are you a Rams fan? Is that where the excitement lies?
Yeah. Oh, big Rams fan. Yeah, buddy. I actually just got married, and one of my wedding gifts, I actually got an LA Rams replica Super Bowl ring. Yeah.
Well, first of all, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, really. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
very, very cool, man. That's awesome. Are you as bullish on the Rams as I am, being a fan? Are you as optimistic?
Oh, I mean, for sure. Absolutely. You look at last year. Last year was a huge regression from the Super Bowl that they won the year before. But you're dealing with an injured Stafford and then Kupp going down as well. There was just a lot of, Robinson didn't work out for them as well. Yeah. But, there's a lot of question marks whether or not Sean McVay would come back. But since he's, confirmed that and come back, I feel like there's just a new breath of life. There's a new game plan. They said goodbye to Jalen Ramsey as well. Moving around some pieces, but yeah, the emergence of Puka Nacua, I mean, that's crazy. Definitely given them a huge jolt, and they are a fun squad to watch, and Matthew Stafford seems to be back to his normal self, and man, he is dialing up some plays, man. It's really, really exciting and electric football to watch. It was a close call last Sunday against the Colts, but it was a lot of fun. But again, Jesse, thank you so much for jumping on the show with us. We really do appreciate it, and can't wait to have you back on again, man.
My pleasure, boys. Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.
Do, did, will, the Story of People podcast is now available on the Crier Media Network. The first 5 episodes are here and feature some incredible guests that fit into one or all 3 of those categories. Ready? Tara Sloan from the San Jose Sharks, Undercurrent podcast at NBC Sports. Marianne Iveson from Iveson Voice and the Let's Take This Outside podcast to talk about the world of outdoors as well as voiceover land. Ariana Hunsicker, future Canadian Paralympic swimmer, already winning tons of awards for this country. Scott McGregor from the Hot Wallet podcast to dumb down the world of crypto, Bitcoin, and NFTs so you don't have to. And Jackie Holowaty from Climate Pledge Arena in Seattle, Washington, the first net zero carbon certified arena on the planet. Wherever you get your pods, wherever you watch your pods, and on the Crier Media Network.